thing you saw in the other day.
Oh, film that,
you know what,
mate.
I should be filming
that. Film I saw, filming
that. Yeah, filming that. I like going to Argos.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of There's a Film in That.
Oh, hey, you see that thing I watched?
Oh, did you? Yeah, I saw film. That.
There's a film in that.
Good, isn't it? Yeah, I thought that.
There's a film in that. I like it too much.
Where we are striving to create the first ever podcast written feature film. As always, joining me this week are Ryan and Tiernan.
Hello.
Hello.
And today we are aiming to fill up our cul-de-sac with a mix of wonderful and combustible characters who God can slowly pick off one by one.
Sadly, the first thing we've realised on meeting up this week is that we didn't leave any cliffhangers, did we?
No.
So already we've failed on that front. But
sorry.
Michael Rooker and Sylvester Stallone were on a cliffhanger. That film cliffhanger.
But we have brought terrible jokes, at least, so yeah. That's good. Yeah. No, but
that is a terrifying beginning of a film, isn't it? Do you remember that?
I don't really remember.
Is that when he's on the line and it's breaking?
You've got to help me, please help me. And then she's like,
and it's his girlfriend, isn't
it?
Yeah. Oh, it's very sad.
I must watch it again.
Yeah, it's got a good soundtrack, that, as well.
Nice. All right.
There's a cliffhanger for you.
There's a cliffhanger, yeah. Oh, good wordplay. Good wordplay. It's on today, lads. It's on today. But we did leave some recommendations for the first time, which were Shortcuts from Ryan and Magnolia from myself. Ash didn't have one, other than, I think, just kind of get on with life. So that was his tip of the week. But so then we'll throw it at you, Ash. What did you think of our two films?
I sat down in the lounge the other day. I thought, right, I'm gonna plough through these recommendations. I looked up Magnolia. I saw it was 3 hours and 10 minutes. I thought, I don't have enough life for this. So I looked up Shortcut. Saw it was 3 hours and 10 minutes, and thought, thanks, guys. It's great.
I think mirroring maybe what our listeners think upon seeing a new episode.
Yeah. I managed to put.
I don't have enough life for this. Yeah. There's a secondary name for the podcast.
You have 2 hours and 59 minutes left. Never get to the end.
I can never watch Magnolia. Yeah.
But you did make it through Magnolia.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did. I really enjoyed it. It made a lot of sense. It has some really great characters, things that we can touch on in today's episode. It had a great soundtrack that I really enjoyed. And
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, really good, really good.
Cool. No, P.D. Anderson, great man for soundtracks.
I think you can probably reel off the cast better than I.
Well, yes, I think it's Tom Cruise's best performance. Great work from always is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly's in it, who's great. Really, I mean, the whole cast, great performances all round. Mm. So Philip C. Hall, I believe, he's in it. And then
Macy, what's his name? William H.
William H. Macy, yeah, he's very good in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've got the list there, right?
Just got the list there, yeah. Jason Roberts, the dad, isn't he?
Yeah, Julianne Moore. She's
Julianne
great
Moore.
In it as well,
yeah.
Really great ensemble cast.
Really
and great film.
Julianne Moore.
And actually, it has some stuff in for what we're about to do with Acts of God as well and everything else like that.
Yeah.
Some strange goings on, say at least. No
weird
spoilers.
Weather.
We'll aim not to spoil anything this week, I think.
This is a non-spoiler week.
Non-spoiler week, but
we'll
just keep it about characters. But
okay,
it's, But yeah, but
ignore
no, good film.
I found out this week that P.T. Anderson's been directing all the recent Radiohead videos.
He has. Because actually one of the... Is it Johnny Greenwood or Greenhouse from Radiohead?
Don't make yourself look
but one of the lads from Radiohead.
One of the lads.
Let's edit that back in. One of the lads from Radiohead. He does the soundtracks for all of P.T. Anderson's films, so I think that's where that connection comes from. Johnny Greenwood or Johnny Greenhouse.
Yeah. Johnny Greensleeves.
Johnny Greenfields.
Johnny
it's,
Green
one of the, it's one of those
It's
four.
One of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Johnny Green Giant.
lead guitarist and sweet corn salesman.
Who would buy
is that
from
the Green,
Green Giant?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
That's terrifying. The big old Green Giant coming was... forcing sweet corn on you.
Well, I mean, it's better than anything else you can force on you.
Ho, ho, ho.
No, Green Giant. Not again.
I said no. No, Green Giant.
But yeah, I think it's Johnny Greenwood. And Ryan, you've seen it as well years back, I believe.
What?
Magnolia, the film we're talking about.
I had. It's my sister's favourite ever film. That is
very good.
That aside from me and my sister have quite a kinship with films, and we both love Big Trouble in Little China. So when my sister said my favourite film's Magnolia, I thought she was lying, but she wasn't.
Very good.
It's one of my favourite films, yeah. So, yeah.
I should probably take this moment to apologise to one of our listeners, John Redihoff, who has been trying to get me to watch Magnolia again for the last 10 years, and I've been telling him to shove off, and now I've watched it, and it was all right.
Oh, there you go.
So, sorry, John.
I think that will go on the... they can relaunch the DVD with that quote.
Yeah.
I've rewatched it, and it was all right.
Yeah. Pop that on the front.
There's a film.
Three stars.
But we didn't... None of us sadly watched Shortcuts, though, did we? Well, we will aim to do that, I think, over the next couple of weeks, maybe.
I think it was A Man in the Climb, wasn't it?
But yeah.
It's a good film, though.
But we actually, we were chatting. There are some other good multi-stranded ones we came up with. Pulp Fiction, obviously, being one.
Yep.
Someone recommended Love Actually to me. Weirdly, I've seen the Dutch version of Love Actually, but I haven't seen the English version of Love Actually.
What happens in the Dutch one?
I think similar.
They meet at Schiphol Airport.
Similar stuff, yeah. I believe so. But there is, I think it's actually originally, it could even be originally based on the Dutch film or vice versa. But yeah, there is a Dutch version.
So what you're saying is that, what's his face? Who's the right?
You'll have to narrow that down for me.
Richard Curtis. He's been stealing.
No, let's go back on this. I don't want to be blacklisted. No, but I think there is a Dutch version.
No, I think you're right. There's a few of those types of that type of multi-stranded ones, because you've got that, like, New York, I Love You one, haven't you? And then another one coming out.
Traffic's another favourite one of mine.
Traffic. That is a heavy old.
Yeah, Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah,
I've not seen that.
Good film. Actually, do a cool thing as well in that. It has three main storylines, and he used like different colours for each story.
Yeah.
So one's kind of all blue hint, one's all yellow hint. That's so right. You immediately know visually which story you're in when you cut to it.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crash is kind of multi-stranded,
yeah. It's a good film. You had one as well, didn't you?
Well, Ryan mentioned The Big Short, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
Very good film. Really enjoyable. Managed to make economics interesting.
Didn't it?
Yeah. Good. Christian Bale, another good ensemble cast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Christian Bale.
And Brad Pitt had good hair.
Brad Pitt, he did have good hair.
So the reason that you guys picked those two films is because, or I believe it was because, they were both very character-driven films. So did you have a favourite character that you'd like to pick out of that, or any other film that you guys are enjoying?
Yeah. There's one character always sticks in my mind that's not in Shortcuts or Magnolia. Is a character in the film called Sleuth from 1972, and it's played by Laurence Olivier, and the character's called Andrew Wyke. And Andrew Wyke is a crime writer, and in the film his backstory is that he's won loads of awards, the Edgar Allan Poe Writers Award, and had very nice long life in writing, and made lots of money, and he lives in this big old house. And his estranged wife is seeing, has this other bit on the side, who's played by Michael Caine, called Milo. And Andrew invites Michael Caine's character around with a proposition to help him keep his wife in the life of luxury that she has become accustomed to. Well, at least that's how he thinks happening, but actually it's just a big, massive mind F. For each other. It's quite a big cat and mouse game, but very clever. But Andrew's character is tries to keep his status as much as he can, but is all over the place in not necessarily in performance, but in the tactics that he uses and the way he gets what he wants.
So did you say he invited, it's a bit of a cuckold thing, he invited her a bit on the side round?
Yeah. You have to watch it, man. It was a play. Originally, Anthony Schaefer, who wrote Wicker Man.
Okay.
And he did that. And in fact, if it wasn't for The Godfather in 1972, Sleuth would have won the...
Oscar.
I mean, this
only
is
beaten out by the best film of all time, potentially.
Yeah. Mm. So
not bad.
Amazing film. Amazing performance. And yeah.
Very good.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Tiernan, did you have any characters you wanted to pick
out? From Magnolia, I'll pick out Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, but...
What was that? What was Philip Seymour Hoffman's character name?
I can't remember now.
Come on now.
He's the aide, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to make me pick names all week, are you?
I want to know.
Yeah, the nurse.
All right.
The nurse. But Phil Palmer, I believe.
Yeah, good. Excellent knowledge.
Ryan definitely didn't show me that on his phone just there. But thanks for that. Right. But I'm going to pick another character again, similar to Ryan, outside of any of the films we watched so far. But I may have mentioned this show on the podcast so far. Nora Durst from The Leftovers.
What's The Leftovers?
Oh, what isn't The Leftovers? It's everything. So, played by Nora Durst, character played by Gary Coon. I tell you, great series.
I'm going to fade your microphone out when you're
talking. It's a running theme now. I'm going to have something. I'm going to reference it for the whole series now somehow. But no, a great character, Nora Durst. Mm. So, Leftovers set in the aftermath of the Rapture, where 2% of the world's population disappeared. And Nora Durst has all her family disappear, her husband and two kids, one morning. The morning of the Rapture. And the series follows her and she's a massive part of the series. Again, a lot of TV, I guess, in a way, can often be multi-stranded, but she's definitely one of the leads. And quite a complex character, struggling to deal with, like, moving on from the disappearance of her family and, you know, whether she wants to move on, how she moves on, where they've gone, all these things she's battling with and how trying to deal with her grief. And really, really good character. Great performance. Gary Coon up for Emmy for work in Fargo as well this year. So she's also in that, the TV series of Fargo. But she's, it was an awesome character.
Well, I will get round to watching it. So thanks.
You should.
Just another casual 30 hours of watching to me this week.
You thought Magnolia was bad.
You're whizzed for it.
This is 10 Magnolias. Yeah. It's about 30 hours.
10 Magnolias. That's a terrifying concept.
I tell you. But it's well worth it. Well worth it.
Okay.
So it does. In fairness, it does have some. My idea last week. I want to say it drew on it completely, but I mean, there's certainly a bit of crossover with Acts of God and things like that. Obviously, with the Rapture and nothing, potentially people being struck down by God. So, I'd highly recommend it. But yeah. But anyway, we won't dwell on The Leftovers. It does get a lot of airtime already.
Good, because Leftovers got their own podcast.
You can actually listen to Tim and every week on The Leftovers.
Little side gig I'm working on. But how about you, Ash, then?
Favourite character? I think I'd have to pick out Christoph Waltz in Django Unchained.
I thought you were going to say Inglourious.
I thought you were as well.
I'm sorry, did I pick the wrong one?
Yeah, well...
I thought you were going to say Green Hornet.
Nope.
No.
No one's going to say
that's
that.
That's a bingo.
It's the wrong film.
I think you should have said that in Django as well. Don't know when, don't know why, but should just be in every Christoph Waltz film.
So why Christoph Waltz?
I think it's the opening scene, the establishing scene for his character, where he comes in on the dentist's wagon with the tooth bouncing around.
I love it.
It's a great scene. And I think his opening few lines of dialogue give hint to this amazing backstory that I found really engaging. Just one of those characters that I watched and I immediately wanted to know about, which I think is the goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the worst thing, isn't it? If you're watching something and then instantly you're given a backstory and exposition, you're gonna judge the character. Even if you don't want to, you're going to judge a character. And if you're giving all the information straight away without any kind of clues, it's not testing the audience. You want to feel like the audience, at least I do, want to feel like I've got to work for my, two and a bit hour Tarantino film. I want to understand the character more, unless it's,
But you always want to get to that point where you feel like you care about the character. Right. And I feel like Christoph, in that film, he gets to that point almost immediately. There's nothing worse for me than getting 90 minutes into a film and going, I don't care about any of these characters.
Yeah. Is there any films that you guys can think of the top of your heads that you've done that you've watched for, I just hate all of you?
Oof.
I think my favourite backstory reveal ever, and I recommend it to everyone, is possibly one of the worst films in the world, but in it being so bad, it's one of my favourite films, is Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Seen that?
No, great characters.
I mean, those two are excellent characters.
Yeah.
Don't get as much screen time as you'd imagine. Budget constraints.
True.
But there is a character on a plane who is a really short shot. This plane's about to, spoiler, is not having the best of time. And all his dialogue is, all he says is, he speaks to the air steward and says, I'm going home, my wife's about to have a baby. and it's my favourite. Like, oh, we're supposed to care about this character. Oh, the character's
well,
gone.
That's always always a great filmmaking trick, isn't it? Like, give him a baby.
Yeah, give him a baby. Yeah.
How can we
give him a baby? Give him a cat. Give him something that we're meant to think, oh, they care about something.
Yeah,
John Wick.
We should care about them. John Wick with his dog. Yeah.
I'm still very upset about that, to be honest.
Yeah. What? No. John Wick or the dog?
The dog.
Yeah.
John Wick's all right. Spoiler.
Kind of. Yeah, no need to be upset for him. No need to be upset. Now I'm trying to think. I have a slightly less comedic film, but I'm trying to think. The one film that constructed my mind where I wasn't particularly fond of any of the characters was Shame.
Yeah,
the Michael Fassbender film where he's a sex addict, and it's not my. I can't think of anyone in that I was like really pumped for.
Rooting for, yeah.
So, but I'm sure there's plenty of other examples. So, and that's not to say that's a bad film, because I think that was an interesting film, and a Steve McQueen film, the director of 12 Years a Slave, one of his earlier films. And it's not a bad film at all, it's interesting, but I don't think there's anyone I was really rooting for.
So what would you say makes...
To root for a sex addict, you have to have really good writing.
I thought that would have been right up your street.
It's like a Kevin Bacon one when he's a pedo.
Footloose.
Yeah, Footloose, that's the one. No, the Woodsman. Is it the Woodsman?
Oh, it is, yeah.
And that's kind of difficult, because you're watching that and you're like, it shouldn't really be... Oh, fuck, I tell you what, it's not really a film, but it totally spins on its head. This is a mess. Oh, I can't do this.
You can.
There's a Black Mirror that's got an incredible way of playing with how you feel about a character and how you're...
15 million credits?
Shut Up and Dance. And you're rooting for this character to try and get away with whatever they've been caught doing, and then you realise at the end what they've done.
Oh, of course,
oh man, and that's what you want. Is the last impact is you're watching this character and then you feel like you've been betrayed in the best possible way, not betrayed by a bad performance or by storytelling, but by that character's choice in the narrative. Oh, yeah, that's fucking.
That's a good reason. And the other, when you were saying that, you know what that also reminded me of, weirdly, is Batman versus Superman.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
By the end I was just like, I don't really.
Amazing. All I cared about was all the buildings getting blown up.
I didn't really care about anyone. No, all their decisions were all over the shop. I didn't like what they were up to, and it's just like, yeah.
And then suddenly it came down to the fact that their mums both have the same name.
Yeah.
And that was the turning point.
I've
not
your
seen
mom's
that.
Your mum's mother? Your mum's mother?
What am I meant to do?
Let's get a fence of bad guys.
Oh, God. Yeah. Kill me.
Yeah.
Let's not dwell on films that we dislike.
True. Because
that's a dark hole to go down.
Yeah.
3 hours later.
Hard work's gone into making them something.
No, true. Every film is a lot of hard work. So, yeah, we won't slag them off too much.
No, true. So, going back to talking about compelling characters, in your opinion, Tiernan, what makes for a compelling character?
Well, we touched on a few things already. You said backstory. So, you know, what their story before the film, I guess, is the way to describe that. Where they've come from, who they are, what's made them the person they are.
Yeah.
Secondly, a big thing in filmmaking and writing and acting is, and I'm sure Ryan has thoughts on this, about wants and needs.
Definitely.
Everyone, like, what do they want? What are they striving after? I guess in, you know, Django, it's to potentially go save Brumhilda.
Brumhilda.
Brumhilda. I'm saying that right. And things like that. So what are they after? And I think some of the stuff we chat about, again, TV especially has brought on the idea of, like, complex characters. I think supposedly the audience these days want complex people.
Mm.
Probably the first of which, well, not necessarily the first, but certainly the biggest reference there, maybe Tony Soprano. He's always the one I think people talk about, that like a next level of character, certainly in the TV world, that someone who was complex and misunderstood, and you had to take your time to get to know, like a mobster in therapy, and never seen that before, so... Yes, I think that's what people...
That's not entirely true, though,
I'm saying not necessarily the first.
Because analyse this...
But I guess on that big scale of TV and loads of episodes and loads of time to explore him and his family and all the friends around him and everything. So, but I think, audiences are more trained now these days to want complex people.
Yeah.
Not someone who's necessarily just straight up what they first appear.
Sure. And I think that's why we've made an active decision to make our film at least 6 hours long. Is that right?
Yeah.
100 characters. Yeah. It's complex. Yeah.
It's like Nymphomaniac's got part one and part two now.
Yeah.
So that could be multi-stranded, actually. I'm not sure I need to watch that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So from that theory, we thought we'd try and apply that to our own cul-de-sac. And we came up with the idea of maybe 9 houses, so that we'd each take 3 each to begin with, and try and fill them with a lead character each. So potentially 9 strands to our story. They'd be surrounded by kind of secondary characters, husbands, wives, children, anything else like that, other housemates, etc. But we thought we'd try and come up with 3 leads each to fill up the cul-de-sac. And we said we'd try and come up with a name, a backstory, a bit of wants and needs, and then, yeah, as any connections they might have with other people in the cul-de-sac. But we thought we'd actually save that bit to the end. So maybe the best way to do this, let's just get our 9 characters out there.
Cool.
Sure. And then okay. We can kind of we can even give a visual at the end of it. Maybe we can draw out the podcast to throw up on Instagram and Twitter and everything else like that.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah. So yeah, boom. Cool. So who would like to go first?
I'm happy to dive in.
if
that's okay with
dive
everyone.
Dive away, sir.
Awesome. So we'll go for it.
All right. So my first character is a Russian, Mikhail Rybakov.
Ooh.
He's a loner who's starts off as a background character and gets pushed forward into the spotlight later in the plot. A Russian ex-HCR meteorologist, that's the Russian Met Office, whose failure to spot an inbound hurricane the previous year has led him to flee Moscow and start a new life in England. Mikhail now obsesses over weather patterns and is the first to spot the problems ahead. Bitter at a world that's mocked him in person and online, he has chosen to keep silent about the upcoming disaster and instead has spent the past year stockpiling enough resources and adapting his house to survive the heatwave and drought. So that's my first character.
Oh.
As a sub note, I've got, he's driven by revenge.
Classic sub note. Yeah. P.S. driven by revenge. And nice.
Yeah,
and the way.
The weather
so
driven in
he didn't. I wasn't. Is Russia famous for its hurricanes?
It did actually, and I wondered if it was too close to the bone because it did actually have a really terrible hurricane a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't aware. I always associate hurricanes with kind of Caribbean area and South Florida and everything else like that. I know that, and they pop up in other areas of Asia, I believe, and things like that. But I wasn't aware that Russia had too many.
Yeah, I know. It was hit by one.
Dear.
The world is changing, Tiernan.
I know. Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore's causing it.
My first character, Al Gore. cool. So he didn't spot the hurricane and has since moved to England, but now doesn't want to kind of help anyone out with the weather anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, the keen Russian-speaking listeners amongst us will have noticed that Mikhail Rybakov is a Russian play on Michael Fish.
Look at this guy.
Yeah. Senor Fish.
Senor Fish.
No, that's the Spanish. Oh, Michael sorry. Fish.
Monsieur Poisson.
I did very almost go down that road.
Did you?
Nice. Very good.
Okay, so Ryan, what's your first character?
My first character is Joanne Niebolt. She is
solid name.
Solid. Good. Niebolt.
Of the Niebolt dynasty.
Yeah. So she is an author, like a science fiction author, and now she's a radio host of the late night / early morning slot on a local radio station. She moved out of the local area. She's originally from it. Moved out to New York when one of her first book became quite popular and was hitting the bestsellers and stuff. So she went off and did a tour where she met her husband in Seattle, where they settled down and had a wee baby. Called Kirsty.
Scottish, you see.
Oh, hey.
That took a dramatic
just the baby
turn.
Is Scottish.
Wee babies.
Are
we baby Niebolt.
A wee baby. Joan. A cock high hen. Come on, you. Do that. So, where was I?
Notoriously misunderstood in New York when she was there.
There's a problem with your baby.
No problem at all. What's your problem?
Wee baby. So they're in Seattle, her and her husband, who I haven't named, but just for argument's sake, let's call him Keith.
I prefer Bolt.
Boltney Bolt. So Boltney Bolt. What happens is in Seattle is they settle down. He puts all of her money into some kind of pyramid scheme venture, loses everything, and racked with guilt,
Bolt.
Joanne Lee Bolt's husband, Bolt, ends up taking his own life.
Oh my God.
I know. Taking a deep turn. We've hit a 45 degree.
What was the pyramid scheme?
The pyramid scheme. What, are you serious? You want me to go into the schematics of the pyramid scheme?
I just really hoped it was a
prosthetic
scheme,
knees.
A scheme of which.
It was.
Someone say the knee bolt scheme.
I've got some bad news. Do you remember that scheme? Do you remember that venture I was telling you about? That was going to keep us in money for the rest of our lives, and little Kirsty was going to have money.
Oh, what? Kneebolt?
That's right. Kneebolt. It's not. This will be a letter that you hear a VO of, like, you know.
Oh, nice.
He's already dead. He's I don't know, he's hung himself with the knees. Something's happened. Stop cheapening his death. Right, so he's basically topped himself, and she ends up, from there, kind of things go in the direction of a writer's block, and she feels that maybe to come home, back to where she grew up, would be more of a solid upbringing for a kid. It may help her go over this grief and what have you, and even stop the writer's block. So she takes a job. She still has a bit of weight to her name. So she takes a job in this local radio station, and she is essentially, her objective is probably to find her next bestseller. She'd written quite a successful sci-fi novel, and people are expecting like a follow-up, and she's been trying to find that, hasn't found that, and then suddenly the events start happening, and she sees a connection, and yeah, that's pretty much it. And her daughter Kirsty is 17. She's at college. Ultimately her story, she wasn't necessarily a main character. She has a connection with one of my other characters, but I hadn't really fleshed that one out. Joanne Kneebolt was the one I was going with.
She's double barrel Kneebolt now.
Yeah, she is.
Cool. Very nice. So yeah, so she's come home, but she wants to get back to writing. And does she have an involvement in the flower show at all?
Is she
a gardener?
No. Okay. No, I think
I feel the flower show hasn't started off too well. We've got two characters with zero interest in flowers.
I've got one.
Okay.
Cool.
I think she's, her connection is that she will support she to her, that is the whole idea of community is really important as a comfort blanket for her right now. So to see this whole flower show is no way going to have a negative impact on her.
Cool. Awesome. Cool. Well, I'll throw my first one into the ring then.
Go for it.
I've got, I've called her Tallulah Murphy, a wannabe YouTuber.
So, WooTuber.
A WooTuber. So she's 17, lives with her parents and two brothers. She's had a YouTube channel for 2 years, but she's stuck on around 700 subscribers. Can't seem to bust through and get any more.
Sounds familiar.
She's been specialising in makeup videos, but tries to dabble in comedy sketches. Or she's been trying a few different things to get the channel going. None of it's kind of worked.
Has she referred to herself as wacky and crazy? Because that's not going to help.
I think that's in her bio. Yeah, that's in her bio timeline.
Please take that out.
Yeah. So she's stuck on this. Can't get it. She's just in that overcrowded world of young YouTubers. Can't seem to find a niche for herself. But then when the flower show comes around and the television cameras and everything that comes with that, and then the subsequent potential end of the world or climate change event that comes with it, she views that as a great way to finally expand her channel and gets the views that she craves.
Nice.
So she's very much trying to take advantage of what happens to begin with. I just thought she was maybe a character I haven't seen so much in films and TV as of yet.
Mm.
like people who, it's like a big part of modern Britain and youth culture now, I think YouTube, and like people wanted to get into that, and whereas before it might have been you wanted to be an actor or a musician, now you can do that through YouTube. But I don't think it's a character I've seen yet, but I think it quite well represents modern Britain, so I thought I'd throw Tallulah in there. Tallulah doesn't have to be her real name, could be her YouTube name.
Could it be Nebolt?
Could be Nebo. Could be.
She does, could be. Does she suffer from any cyberbullying?
Potentially a little bit of that, yeah.
Or dodgy knees.
Or dodgy knees, yeah. She was an unfortunate victim of a pathetic knee pyramid scheme. No, definitely some cyberbullying in there. So she's I didn't have her necessarily as like an unpopular girl or anything else like that, but certainly, as with any online thing, as we're finding out, that there would be some, you know, negative feedback to a negative comment, and quite, yeah, potentially some bullying. So that's my Tallulah's my first one. So that's our first round.
That's
So that's just, yeah, keep going then. Round two, Ash, ding, 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 ding.
Right. So my second character is Gerald Led, the local scoutmaster, married and living with Valerie. And as a side note, Valerie is a keen home gardener and is one of the very excited OAPs about the upcoming garden show.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Gerald is a decorated naval engineer who served in the 1970s and 80s and was on the HMS Ardent when it was sunk during the Falklands War. He's a no-nonsense right-wing thinker, and he thinks Trump talks sense.
Of course he does.
Wants and motivations. Gerald is kind of driven by paranoia. Gerald puts his heart and soul into training his scouts, but he becomes increasingly convinced that the heat wave is part of a Russian chemical attack. A hot war, if you will.
Oh, I have a feeling he doesn't like someone.
Arming his troops the best he can, Gerald wages war on the Kremlin and, by proxy, Mikhail Rubikov. And I've got another interesting footnote. The HMS Ardent's motto was "Through fire and water."
Wow!
Oh.
Do you want an interesting fact about if you sink your own ship in the Navy?
Please tell.
You get sent to prison. So during like World War, before that would have been like previous wars. If you were the,
he didn't elect to sink it.
No, I know. But if you're responsible for the vessel,
right?
If it goes down,
so if you're the captain,
if you're the captain, and then you come back, you get put in prison.
Oh wow! I never knew that. Court-martialable.
It is.
Wow.
Nice. Oh, I like that. A bit of conflict already between the characters then, yeah.
Just in case there is any avid Navy followers, how still important that is right now, I don't think that.
Who knows? Tradition!
Stand by your back.
What do you know about the Navy?
In the Navy. We cannot sink our ships.
We'll go to prison.
I don't know where we're off to with that.
Love it.
So good. Bit of conflict already between your two characters.
Yes. Yeah. Cool.
Conflict is what you want.
Yeah.
I also really like the idea of a scoutmaster who was indoctrinating kids into thinking that there was some kind of...
And so,
that's good. The end is nigh, but from
once
a militant...
Once again, like, that kind of Trump boy scout thing that happened a few weeks ago.
Mm. Yeah, pulling that back in, I suppose.
Yeah. That's quite nice. I like that. And so what potentially does he think or want out of the flower show? Obviously, his wife's very excited, but how about Gerald?
I haven't really fleshed that out, to be honest.
But that's quite a good thing to think about maybe later on. I've got a bit of a note on that, actually, because I think that it would be a positive thing. But we'll talk about that in a bit.
Cool. Very nice.
Thank you. So let's go to character five.
All right. Well, this is where ours may clash a little bit. Godcat Man.
That was the cliffhanger.
Oh yeah.
Who is Godcat Man?
Godcat Man.
Cliffhanger answered.
You ready? It's David Grimes.
Nice.
He's a retired bell ringer.
Every cul-de-sac has one.
And he has two cats, Balthamos and Pretty Metty. What are you looking at me like that for?
That's such an excellent name.
His backstory is he has lived in the cul-de-sac his entire life. Never married, got close once. Doesn't have a solid opinion about that, isn't that? Just you know, he never got time to it. You know, the church was his life. And he is an avid, he loves the garden, but he also is, it's not your quintessential. He sits in a dark room playing the organ with all the, like, the windows shut or anything like that. He's keen to please, and he's a very likable person, and he likes to, you know, let's make sure everyone is okay. At least that's his intention. Sometimes it can be seen, I think, from other members as maybe he's a bit of a he's a bit too keen, a bit too Roy, and his objective ultimately is to uphold this community spirit with, or this cul-de-sac spirit with this flower show, and to make it the best it can be in God's eyes.
Okay.
So he wants to please everyone by also and kind of, he's the type of guy that will leave you know, little like kind of pamphlets about God and Jesus,
yeah,
in the Christmas card with you, and or, you know, he'll say, you know, if he sees you on a bad day, he'll come over and ask if he wants to pray with you or something.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very good. Bell ringer. I love the idea of the bell ringer.
That is great.
I like the idea that in retirement he just goes around and presses people's doorbells for a kick.
David!
For the love of God, Grimes!
I was thinking of Frank Grimes when you said the name.
Oh, yeah,
of the
yeah. I kind of did think a little bit. That was I think... That did come into my head, old Grimey.
Old Grimey, yeah.
Yeah. Great. One of the greatest characters ever created. Frank Grimes.
Frank Grimes from The Simpsons. Amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. Another good character.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So I go with my third one then. I've got Spencer Tompkins, the internet troll.
So, ooh.
Holy
I see conflict.
Yeah. So from what you asked me earlier, he's 19. He's a student, and he's renting a room in one of the houses. Oh, so I thought someone was making a little extra cash on the side.
I bet they haven't declared
and,
that.
Yeah. No. Definitely not. Definitely not. So, and he's got one of the rooms. He suffers from a range of anxiety disorders, and instead prefers to live behind his online persona. He's been trolling for around 3 years, something he got into during his teenage years, locked in his bedroom, enjoying getting a rise out of people. And so he's been doing it for around 3 years, and one of his regular targets is young Tallulah.
Poor Tallulah.
So, who he secretly has a crush on, but
he
doesn't have the, you know, classic. But he doesn't have the, he feels he doesn't have the personality skills or anything to approach her in a normal way. And so it's kind of, yeah.
So he pauses the YouTube and...
Another great visual there.
I think the listeners can probably work that one out.
Yeah, I think we can fill in the blanks for that one.
He pleasures himself.
So, and he views the flower show as and the accompanying social media activity around it as an excuse to up his trolling game, to annoy everyone on the street and settle some old scores. I managed to plow through the laughter that was going on at the wank joke, but I'm quite pleased with that.
So, yeah. You did well.
So he, well done. Thanks. So yeah, he views the flower show as an excuse to. I kind of felt he didn't really fit in on the cul-de-sac. So he's renting a room. He's not one of the long-term inhabitants. Mm. So he's never quite. You know, not necessarily not being accepted, but doesn't feel a part of that community as such, as where he stays for college and everything else. And so people have been nice to him, but not necessarily it's his home. So, he's kind of...
But he's a real recluse. He doesn't leave.
Potentially he leaves a bit. You know, he goes to college and everything else like that, but certainly keeps himself to himself. I didn't want to go as far as agoraphobic or anything like that, that he would just be locked up in the room. I wanted him to have some scope, to have some interactions.
Okay.
But again, I thought maybe he was a good... good reference for modern Britain and some of the things that go on here and some of the things that, yeah, maybe are coming to the fore in recent years. So, yeah, so that was Spencer Tompkins, the internet troll. So, yeah, that's number six done. So, last round.
Last round, okay. So I'm going to hark back a little bit to my story idea and introduce the characters Arno and Tania Laurent, a couple fresh from the big city and keen to integrate into village lifestyle. Arno, originally from Paris, is a keen gardener, whose fashion flair is in great demand by his new neighbours. Tania, a high-flying city slicker with a job she still commutes to every day. Tania harbours a dark secret that is dragged into the limelight during Arno's unwanted new fame. And that was it, really. So that I didn't flesh them out too much further. I said, for Arno, I think he idealises the village, the suburban lifestyle, the white picket fence life. And although he has high fashion pretences, he longs to fit in. And Tania, on the other hand, is the ambitious one of the two and seeks to take advantage of the new order.
Nice. I like them. So they're to remind everyone, they're a throwback, kind of an amalgamation of some of your characters from your original treatment. Yeah?
That's right, yeah.
Nice. No, I like them at the time, so that's good to see they've come back.
Mm.
Nice.
All right. And
so, yeah, so they potentially want to... it's him especially who really wants to fit in. And by the sounds of it, he is fitting in then, yeah? Mm. People like him, they're like... Yeah, and he's come at the right time with what's going on with the garden and the flower festival.
Exactly, and it's the unwanted attention on Tarnia, the high-flying city slicker, that's the key focus there.
Okay. What is the unwanted attention?
Well, I talked in my idea in the last episode about one of the characters harbouring a dark secret that's revealed by this hosepipe band.
Okay.
And I haven't specifically talked about what the dark secret is. I've got, a body under the patio style reveal. Something that she really wants to keep out of... her own self-interest she wants to keep secret.
Mm. And her husband's, like, popularity and flower skills are dragging her into, you know, situations.
Having to, integrate.
So there's not only conflict, there's, you know, conflict in their marriage then as well, maybe.
Yeah,
he's
perhaps.
Unaware of that, maybe.
Yeah, I think I almost saw him as being a simpler character. I don't mean that in a harsh way, but, you know, as her being really the brains of the...
Yeah, it's more of a sunny disposition.
Yeah, no, he's just looking out to be creative and enjoy his garden and do the simpler things in life, whereas she's, big business.
Exactly, yeah.
Nice.
And it's that moving away from the city theme that we talked about last episode that I was calling back on there.
Cool.
Okay.
Nice. I like that.
Cool, yeah. Ryan?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm really torn here because I've obviously written a few characters and whittling down to three has made it difficult. And one thing I'll go with this. I'm going to stick with my guns. So, I've got Beverly Tesh and Dr. Helen Fell. What now?
Dr. Helen Fell. It feels like she's just named after the description of one of her patients.
Doctor, what happened? Oh, Helen Fell.
So Beverly Tesh and Helen Dr. Fell. I'll start with Dr. Fell. She is the local GP. Neither of them come from the area. She moved in when obviously space came up. She'd finished basically going through all of her qualifications and everything like that, and now her trust, well, basically she's been placed into this practice. So that is her job. She's not necessarily the main character in this. Beverly Tesh is from German descent and is a freelance translator. She doesn't have much like, what was the last character?
Arno Laurent.
Much like Arno doesn't have a lot to do. She has a lot of time on her hands. She's freelance, so she comes back and forth from what she's doing. And so she has found that she likes doing the garden, what have you, but she has more of a love or a predatory love interest with Joanne's daughter Kirsty.
Didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't.
I thought they were a very happy couple.
Yeah, well, they're okay, but I think she has a sense of, not necessarily bored or anything like that. I think that she moved in.
It's footloose all over again.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, just can't catch a break, can you? When things obviously start heating up, literally in temperature.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. So Dr. Fell, she acts as when residents of the close in the community start to suffer from the first signs of death. Being deaf.
she's got all the symptoms of death.
I think it's her
early onset death.
Much as like most GPs, but hate being like their friends getting the, oh, I've got this problem with my leg, what is it? You know, they hate diagnosing their friend. Not hate it, but it's not the, you know, the life out of that.
So mix and work and play.
Yeah. And so, but I think she sees her responsibility to care kicks in. So when the world starts to heat up, she's pressing on everyone, so, look, you know, you've got to look after yourself. This is happening. This is happening. So she sees the turning point as well from a different side that maybe old Russia does.
Right. So do you see her as kind of becoming a leader in that way?
Yeah, or at the very least, just someone who has that responsibility, like as a strong character, and wants to help the community. But when obviously, whether or not like she discovers it, I had an idea in my head that there was a smaller character who was very, or maybe kind of a mix of the church catman do. I think in a bit of a kind of storyline that was that he eager to help everyone spots Beverly Tesh with Kirsty Niebolt,
right? Doesn't he?
And then goes and says something, and then her kind of her hypocrite.
So she's the snitch,
almost. Yeah, she's a dry snitch.
Dry snitching.
Yeah. She has to diagnose her partner with being a paedophile.
Yeah. Well, it's only just, isn't it?
Early onset.
That's not an excuse. Paedophilia. But well, it's, yeah.
I feel you. This is your attempt to sneak Jimmy Savile in.
No, it's like a whole like.
Did she go to Japan? Yeah. And meet this woman, yeah. And it was the Japanese Jimmy Savile.
Yeah,
nice.
And then a monster came.
She played by Richard Ayoade.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that's those two.
Nice.
Cool. And the last two.
Very good. So I'll go for my last one then.
Yes, please. Yeah,
I've got Regina Jones, the Hate Preacher.
Wow.
So Regina is 49, lives with her family of husband and three children. She's a respected member of the community and even teaches at a local primary school. But unbeknownst to the rest of the cul-de-sac, she is also quite a prominent hate preacher. So she's been rising to prominence, and I thought maybe something. You know, I didn't want to go with a different idea of a hate preacher. So I don't know, maybe it could be like what's in the news this week is, you know, white supremacy. So she could be a rising in prominence in white supremacist circles in the past 10 years and highly respected because of her dedication and her oratory skills. And she's, so this is, for her, the flower show could be her opportunity to hijack the event and live television to spout her hatred on live television. So.
Right, okay.
And so like I say, and everyone's kind of unaware of her.
Right.
But behind the scenes, she's,
Okay, so she's not a vocal member of the community out there standing
on
the soapbox.
No, she's just, she's very much keeps the two parts of her life separate.
Okay.
And maybe kind of the idea playing on a bit of you don't know who your neighbours are.
Mm-hmm. And she lives on her own?
No, she lives with her family. She has a husband and three kids, and say she teaches at the local primary school.
Right, okay.
So she is in the community, but say she has this kind of
secret
life.
So she's told, she teaches at local primary school, and she's a hate preacher.
Yeah.
Like, well, how the fuck does that work?
Well, I came up with this because I often see people on the news and that's what I think. How the fuck does that work?
Because you
discover or you know these people this past week in the news and they have these, you know, quite normal, respectable jobs and suddenly they're
not anymore.
No, exactly. Yeah, not anymore, thankfully. But they're just, you know, you just think, you know, they manage to keep these two things separate, I often think. It's just like people are always shocked when you hear this, but I had no idea.
Yeah.
So I quite like that idea that there would be maybe this hate preacher. And again, I think it's something that's very sadly, occasionally in the news about modern Britain and these people who spout this crap. So I thought actually it might be an interesting character to look at and someone looking to seize on the publicity of the cul-de-sac.
And it'd be quite good because at that point, however we're going to do this with tensions rising and conflicts happening is you start to see the cracks in people. So this primary school teacher starts, this slight like turn of phrases happen and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I always think of that Mitchell and Webb sketch with the flutist, the magic flute one.
Yeah.
And, makes them sing their inner thoughts stuff. Yeah, it's a bit like that.
I thought that could be interesting person to have in amongst them. So we'll see. Lots of potential for conflict there.
Oh, well, that's the wonderful thing. So it sounds like we've got some characters that can really gel together.
Yeah, I think there's, when I was hearing about Kirsty Niebolt and then I spoke about Tallulah, for instance, again, these can be characters slammed together.
Yeah.
So, Kirsty could easily, in my mind, become a wannabe YouTuber. So that's not to say the nine we've created are the nine separate houses. I think certainly there's space to push Holy characters shit. Into other houses. I mean, one of mine is renting. So who is he renting with? And that frees up another house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, is he renting with Mikhail or something? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So that he, you know, to pay for Mikhail's supplies and everything else like that. So that actually there's houses start to free up. We could put some other people in then. Because I don't know. Do we want to do a quick fire round? Because I had a couple of others.
Yeah, I had a couple of ones I could quickly just label off, but they all link in. Like there's some actually with your characters, Ash, that are very similar. Like there was a. So I'd like. I'm just going to read off their titles. So, I kind of switched some names around a little bit, but I had a couple, an entrepreneur couple of home. Making baby food from home, organic baby food.
Okay.
And that was a couple that obviously were very keen to keep the community together and have that, and that was their thing, much like without stealing it too much, being like best in show. You know, the what's her name? The one they both got braces and they met in Starbucks. You ever seen Best in Show?
The Crufts thing.
Yeah, the Crufts, yeah.
I haven't seen it for a long time.
That is a recommendation right there. It's great. But those two, I can't think of the lady's name. There was that one, and then I had a local artist called Jodie Shaw. Oh, I was bored that day.
Is she a mouthy northern?
Yeah. I mean, this art is great. Fucking Damien Hirst. No, that's not something for that.
Generic northern.
Yeah. An app creator, a guy called Cam Fawcett. Who has retired? He's 30 years old, retired. You know, does what he pleases. He's a bit of an eyesore. Has a yellow Lamborghini or something on his driveway, something ridiculous, and has just inherited this giant house, which is the house at the top of the cul-de-sac type thing, the biggest house.
Okay.
Rep from the council. I know it's something we've just been talking about residents, but there's one thing which is important. We need to have someone from the exterior. Judge or that,
so and the TV crew, I suppose.
Well, certainly when you say exterior, like, but a council member could still live in the cul-de-sac in my eyes, and if you put them right in amongst it, and then they're forced to deal with it not only at work but in the politics of the cul-de-sac, that'd be good to have someone there in the enemy within, so that could be good. Nice.
The last one was just a 2.4, so it was a family called the Sands, and they are just like perfect. Family and have a real sense of it's that kind of we're just a little bit better than you guys, but we've done this, look at us, you know, we've got everything going. And this idea actually came from that they were one works as an executive, the mum works as the wife works as executive for a Make-A-Wish foundation, so she's up on the PR side of that. The other side, he's essentially a postman, but runs like a one the postal depots and has that and the kids. But the idea came from that
if you had postman a is post, a nice, post, nice.
Sorry?
The postman's a nice idea.
There's that kind of look, guys, we're great. But the idea was that this perfect 2.4, the ones that represented the cul-de-sac. And in order to get the water running, you need to have someone maybe who's got a disability. So the idea was maybe to have their kid's legs broken or something like that.
You've just thrown out quite a big statement there. In order to get the water running, someone needs to have a disability.
There's one of the rules.
I think that is in the rules. Oh.
Yeah.
Have you not researched postpartum bands yet?
This is
week three. How have you?
So the idea was that in order to do that,
I thought you meant in our story. That was the worrying thing for me. I thought you meant to be like someone's got to be the same.
Yeah, no. Well, they can be if they want, but that's the thing, is that in order to do it, so they seek out to hurt their kid in order to get the water running again, because they want to keep the perfect clothes going.
So they're really like desperate. For...
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
But that was some extras.
Yeah. That's good to have some extras, I think, because I think we've got some space. Yeah. Ash, you had any others?
I had one extra character who I had down as being a homeless man who appears in the cul-de-sac. Earl Erner, an American jazz pianist avoided by the locals, although his playing ability is borderline genius. Considered a pest by the locals and frequently moved on. Earl is down on his luck and sleeping rough in the village. The only people who stop to listen to his playing are the new couple, Mr. and Mrs. Laurent. And I guess I used him as a device, really. I said, Earl is there to score the mood of the village at key intervals using a free-to-play piano situated on the village green.
I was going to say, what did he do? Just roll around with a fucking piano? And then, I am listening to my piano.
Sleeps in his piano. Yeah.
Some people have a trolley. Earl has a full-on piano.
Yeah. Grand piano.
Grand piano with, yeah. Looks like Elton John in that T-Rex video. Is that a Christmas one?
Well, I mean, another role's cast itself. We've just had Elton John. Nice. Right? I like that. I like the idea of him scoring the whole thing. That's quite cool.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing I wrote was, surely his lack of assets mean he will fall as the first victim of the heatwave.
Yeah. Ooh.
So we talked about who would and who wouldn't survive.
Yeah. Well, actually, well, that might be a good way. I've got like 2/3 other characters I might throw into the mix, and that's a good way to segue into it, because I had someone who I also thought could be the first to die. So yes. I've just called him, I didn't have a name, the religious figure. So I said someone in their 50s and the leader of a faith. I didn't want to specify the faith at this point. The priest seemed too obvious to me. I think we've seen enough. You know, wise, all-knowing priests and everything else like that. So I thought maybe something different to throw in there. But I said he's accomplished a rare achievement of being respected and loved by the entire street, regardless of religion. He's viewing the flower show as an excuse to further bring together the entire community and showcase their spirit to the country. He's unaware of all the secrets of the cul-de-sac. So, you know, he thinks he's living amongst lovely people. So, and then I put, he's also the driving force behind organising the flower show as a result. He's the one really bringing
sounds
the community
like
together.
David Grimes.
Possibly, yeah. Well, this it could amalgamate into this. But I thought he could be the first to die. Because, I mean, what happens if your kind of spiritual guide is the first to go? The nicest person on the cul-de-sac is the first to go.
Yeah.
That opens it up into, like, well, anyone could go.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of Game of Thrones to it, and that you, if you're killing off someone that
people
don't expect.
Of course you fucking wanted Game of Thrones, didn't you?
Yeah. but no, I thought that would be...
Who's going to die?
but if you do, you kill off someone who's, you know, holding the place together, that sparks the secrets and everything else that comes out. So if he's one of the first to go, and not only the community falls out, but the flower show starts to fall apart, like raising the stakes, everything starts to go. But yeah, so I had him, and then my last couple, I just called them the internet lovers. And they're two singletons, and I've aged them 24 and 58, who are living at either end of the cul-de-sac and have been chatting to each other online for years without ever realising.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I thought it was just two computers. So it was two...
like her.
Just, yeah.
They're always busy at the same time. Yeah. They've never worked it out.
Yeah. So both have been lying about their age to the other to appeal. Oh. So one of them is, you know, potentially a 58-year-old, let's say a 58-year-old woman trying to, she's said she's, you know, late 30s, say something like that. Yeah, found this person online she quite fancies, and she's lied about us. And he then is a 24-year-old young man who's said he's in his early 30s to try and, you know,
catfish.
Yeah, and so they're both kind of catfishing. And so they've set the flower show as the first time to meet.
Oh,
they've said
excellent.
After this, they've claimed to both live in the area, but neither's had, as a result of their lies, neither's had the guts to go for a meeting. But with the excitement and everything around the flower show and the kind of the people there and everything else, they thought it's maybe a good point to finally meet. So that was, pretty solid 9 characters and some nice tag-ons there. So nice options to swap in and out or amalgamate. And, actually, on that note, I think one place I would certainly happy to amalgamate from the very start is I'm very happy for Tallulah Murphy, the wannabe YouTuber, to become Kirsty Knebolt, if everyone thinks that's a good idea.
I don't know if she's got an iron knee.
It's old school, limbs. I and me, but yeah, I think they could become the one person.
Yep.
So yeah, they definitely. Ebolt, the author could have a wannabe YouTuber daughter.
Yeah.
So that becomes one house as opposed to two. Everyone think that's right? Yeah.
Yep.
I think that fits together really nicely.
Nice.
Any other places we could put people together. Who is maybe Spencer living with then from that list?
Well, I think my suggestion would be that perhaps if Spencer's renting, that he's living in the same house as your David Grimes God Catman character.
Right? Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think that
classic pairing there.
Yeah, throw up yeah, kind of. Yeah, good and evil in the same
odd
house.
Odd couple yeah. type scenarios yeah. there.
Nice. So that becomes seven houses from our original like top nine. Yeah, and then we have the few add-ons. So I guess yeah, now we have to decide you know, maybe what? How we narrow this down.
I've got an idea.
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
How about we leave it to the listeners?
Oh no, not this.
Yeah.
Not why them.
Not? All of them.
Yeah.
The many, many listeners.
What? So we're going to leave it to the listeners to decide.
Pretty much, we can do a poll. Of all of our characters, we'll put it up on our Twitter and Instagrammer, and you can also email us the characters that you'd like to see in the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fill up the houses.
Fill up the houses in the street. Yeah.
With a target of going for eight houses, shall we say?
Say, I guess eight houses. Or, well, I'm fair. We do have one homeless character in there, so depending on his results, I think it's either eight full houses or seven houses and a homeless man.
Great.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is a great title for a film.
Seven Houses and a Homeless Man.
Yeah.
Used to be what's two guys get on a pizza hut.
Yeah.
Pizza place.
My two
pizza.
Dads.
Something like that.
Doesn't work.
Yeah. No. Jaws.
Yeah.
Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
Seven Houses and a Homeless Man.
Okay, so let me just recap over all of the names that we have mentioned over the past 6.5 hours. There is Mikhail Rybakov, the ex-HCR meteorologist. There's Joanne Niebolt and her daughter, Kirsty Niebolt. Joanne being the successful writer who had money troubles and has moved back to her hometown.
Yep.
And Kirsty Niebolt, the 17-year-old, who's an amalgamation of her and Tallulah Murphy. So she's the 17-year-old wannabe YouTuber. We have the OAPs, Gerald Led, the ex-naval officer, and Valerie Led, the twee OEP flower enthusiast. We have Spencer Tompkins, the 19-year-old student and troll, who's living with David Grimes, who I still have down as God Catman.
Who forevermore will be God Catman.
I hope so. We have Regina Jones and her family, Regina being the hate preacher but valued member of society in her spare time.
Like yeah. Batman.
Like Batman. We have Beverly Tesh and Dr. Fell, the local GP.
Yep, and she's Tesh is the translator.
Tesh is the translator. We have Arno and Tania Laurent, the new couple to the cul-de-sac from The Big Smoke. We have the entrepreneur couples. We have the app creator. We have Earl Erner, the homeless piano man. We have the non-specific religious leader. We have the online lovers. And finally, we have the 2.4 perfect family.
Okay,
so a lot,
way too many
characters. Yeah, a lot in there to help us. Between.
We thought Magnolia was long. Fucking
yeah,
hell.
Gosh. So, Mum, please, could you just let us know?
Get it right.
Let us know which your favourite characters are, and we'll take it from there.
Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll throw them all up online. People can send in their thoughts and everything, and then so the start of the cliffhanger. We'll give ourselves a cliffhanger for the next episode. Is who the results of that? Who will be in the cul-de-sac?
Yeah.
Who
will? And I guess it comes down to maybe you know. Who do you want to kill?
Yeah.
Some of these people will be dying. And I guess this will be our first, from this, the audience reaction, maybe our first...
God cull.
Yeah, who, and as a result, who's the most liked, who's the most disliked characters?
Yeah. We will be taking that into account.
We have to decide whether to, you know, whether we're answering our audience's pleas or we're going to stomp all over them, I guess. Which
I
is
mean,
quite exciting.
Do still vote.
Yeah. We do listen.
But yeah, so that's quite exciting. So I think it's a good list, some good characters in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just as a reminder then, for that poll, for your thoughts, if you can drop us an email at there'safilminthat@gmail.com. So there'safilminthat@gmail.com. So send us whatever you think of our characters so far. And then you can also get in touch on...
Twitter, on @afilminthat.
Or on Instagram, by looking us up. We are there'safilminthat.
So that's, yeah, and that'll have... Hopefully some more characters and casting suggestions and everything else going forward.
And I, to be honest, I think we should also start a Facebook page. Here's probably another cliffhanger, because then we can host the poll live on Facebook. So keep an eye out for that on Twitter and on Instagram.
Yeah, we'll share all the links there, and then you can go do the poll.
And don't forget to like and subscribe.
Mm.
Okay, Tallulah.
Guys. Hi, guys.
You're such a wooshing
guy. Tallulah Murphy here. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, guys. Goodbye.
Okay, so why don't we take this as a moment to segue into talking about next week's episode and what we are planning to do.
Cool. Well, I think so. Next week, I think we've kind of, a big part of it now, I guess, will be reading results of our poll and our feedback from people as to who they want to be in the house, and so finalising that. And then we thought we'd maybe chat a bit about genre and what we're going to be dabbling in there, and also then possibly the start of structure before we go further on in later episodes into Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. We'll chat more about the whole thing and maybe how multi-stranded works and that, and a few things like that to try and get that locked down before we launch into it blindly. So it'll be kind of a big preparatory episode for starting writing, really. So once we have our plot and once we have our characters, we haven't got much excuse to delay this too much more, lads.
So wow.
That could be,
it's kind of scary.
So it'd be quite hopefully an exciting bit of mix and mash episode, bit of characters to start, genre, structure. So we're now launching into the next episode, might be Act 1 then.
Yeah.
So that's quite exciting.
It is.
But but from that, is there anything then? Let's properly recommend some stuff for next time to do.
Well, I think like a few have fallen out of this episode, right? Best in Show being one of the major recommendations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cliffhanger.
The Big Short, I'd get thoroughly behind recommending
that's
to people
great
who haven't
film.
Seen it.
Mm. Very enjoyable. So yeah, and I've been holding off on one that
Leftovers.
If it's The Leftovers.
No, I would always recommend. So firstly, The Leftovers. But secondly, Ryan mentioned A Hedge Maze earlier. And I'm sure there's people out, if you're into podcasts...
You love Hedge Mazes.
Everyone who's into their podcast knows of Serial.
Yeah.
And spin-off of Serial was a thing called S-Town. Yes. Yeah. Which is a hugely... because I think it fits in well, it's a great character study.
Okay.
And involving a man who is building a hedge maze. I'm not spoiling anything by saying that, but he's an incredible character this podcast follows. And I think it's, I guess we should also recommend some podcasts.
Yeah, or we could recommend some hedge mazes. Anyone? Longleat Safari Park being a good one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Longleat, yeah.
I think there's one. Where is it?
There's a maze.
There's one in Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah? There's a hedge maze in Grand Theft Auto.
There's a hedge maze in Grand Theft Auto.
And I guess, are we starting to run out of time for this week's episode?
It's a funny thing about time, isn't it?
Yeah. Does anyone know what the time is?
Christopher Nolan, do you know what the time is?
He loves time.
He loves time.
Let's ask him.
Okay.
Christopher Nolan, can you tell me what's the time?
What's motherfucking time, y'all?
Christopher Nolan, will you blow our fucking minds?
Oh, shit, my name's Nolan, I begin with Chrissy. I make a lot of films. None of them sissy, I like bats and I like magic. The best thing I like is time, motherfucker.
Oh, 1, 2, 3 into the 4. Chrissy Nolan here, Hans Zimmer on the score. Oh, Matthew, get out from behind my bookcase. You come over here, I slap you in the face. I take your ass over to Dunkirk, and then I'm gonna send you to work.
Put things in the bookcase, they fall over. The kid's supposed to know that you're in the fucking bookcase. What kind of sense does that make? Cause you love time. Has to be about time. Cause he motherfucker Nolan loves time. He loves time, he loves time.
Time is on my mind.
Christopher Nolan here, all I do is love things about time. I made Memento, it made no sense cause it was all out of time. Ha 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 ha, fucking time you up. Drive, yo. If you put that film in order, you get a normal film and you know what happened at the beginning. What's the point in watching it? I'll tell you what's the point in watching it because I mess it with the time.
I'm a wild man, I cannot be tamed. Hey, Bane, what you got to say?
Oh, I got a better bit. Oh, we run out of music.
Chris and Owen likes to play with bats. Beginning, middle, and end. You have Batman Begins, Batman Dark Knight, Batman comes back as a Dark Knight. What the fuck? It's kind of time if you think
spoiler
about it.
Alert.
Spoiler alert. Hey everybody, Batman wins.
If you woke up without a wife, I guess you would have some eternal strife. You'd go to your friend, say tattoo on my ass, then I find my wife again really fast.
Yo,
Chrissy.
What?
What's the time?
The time is get the fuck out of my face. I made that time, I own fucking time. I copyrighted time when I made done good.
But Chrissy, yo, I'm late for a meeting. What the fuck are you quite thinking?
I'm thinking about my massive film budget and I got Hans Zimmer on my mind.
Yo, Hans, I'm trying to have a conversation here.